It's 106 p.m. Let's have lunch together, everybody. Hi, I'm Jennifer English, and this is Around the Table, where each and every day we invite the most interesting and influential tastemakers, newsmakers, style makers, movers and shakers, foodies and friends to join us for a conversation and some moments where we break bread. Really good bread from Don Guerra and Barrio Bread. We save the seat at the head of the table each and every day for our guest of honor. That's you. We would love to hear from you. 520-790-2040. We have a really fun show today, and there's a woman who has made an enormous impact on the world of Mexican food. Her name is Diana Kennedy. She has recently donated her culinary library to the University of Texas, and she has personally, at the age of, I think, 95 or 96, driven her most precious volumes, very rare, very remarkable books, to the collection there. So we're going to talk about Mexican food in the first hour. A little later on, our friend Zarela Martinez, who is from this beautiful region of the world, born in Agua Prieta, and a member of a multi-generational family of culinary influence. Her mother, Aida Gabilondo, a fantastic culinary expert in her own right, wrote one of the first books of Mexican food for home cooks. Zarela's well known as, I love the way she describes what she does, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. And of course, her sons and family members, not only in the restaurant business, but in the entertainment business. Zarela Martinez's son, Aaron Sanchez, from Food Network, is regularly seen on Chopped and on many of the shows. A great chef in his own right, a culinary expert in his own right, and a cookbook author in his own right. We're going to talk about how the legacy of this region continues to make a global impact with Zarela Martinez in just a few minutes. The legacy of Diana Kennedy is going to be explored in the books that she's currently donating to the University of Texas. And we'll talk about what her impact is. And a little later on, we are going to talk to the maestro. So it's going to be Tucson Pops season again. We got rained out last week, so this coming weekend is our launch of the 2019 Tucson Pops season. The maestro will be with us a little later on today to talk about this program that's coming up. And we're going to borrow from yesterday's program that we did with Tucson Foodie. So if you didn't know this, every Thursday, we're very lucky. We have teamed up, partnered with Tucson Foodie. And if you don't know Tucson Foodie, now is as good a time as any to discover this remarkable group that publishes an online digital magazine at tucsonfoodie.com. You can find what they do on Facebook, Instagram. They do a remarkable job. Their videos, in addition to the stories and photography, are some of the finest you'll experience anywhere. There is no city in the country that has any finer team making videos, telling stories, than the Tucson Foodie team. And so we've joined with them to tell the distinctive story of this region's cuisine each and every week on Thursdays from 1 to 3 p.m. We go to their headquarters, and literally they pull out all the stops for us. They put on a spread yesterday because we had a really fun topic. And because we're on remote, there, poor Bob did not get to experience any of the goodies, any of the tastes. He's got, I know, do you have a microphone there? You have your stuff together? Yeah, he's got his Bob, I
taste it.
I know. I feel, there have been a couple times when we've been over there. We've been over there three times now. But yesterday was the day I felt really badly you weren't there with us. Not only did the team from Drunken Chicken come by, not only did the team from Time Market come by, not only did Eric Harding from Elvira's come by with his signature Tucson Pops Paloma cocktail. But
the place was hopping.
They had a spread put out for us you've seen the picture, of course, on Facebook. We had lots of pictures of it. But boy, was it delicious. We had cheeses. We had that beautiful bread. It was just unbelievable. And I'm sorry. So I'm going to have to make it up to you somehow. I don't know how, but what did you have for lunch yesterday so I can feel a little bit better?
I think I had one of these protein shakes, so don't sweat it.
Oh, yeah,
Nothing to write home about.
Right, you're doing the whole getting ready for bathing suit season thing.
Yeah. And I have a lovely two-piece picked out, you know?
I can imagine, when you say two-piece, I'm thinking of those Jed Clampett, Beverly Hillbillies ones that look very much like old-fashioned long john bathing swim suit long underwear.
Yeah, that's fine. Unfortunately, that was what I was thinking.
Yeah, that's what you were thinking too. That's so funny. So, anyway, it was a great show yesterday, and I've got to figure out how we're going to amalgamate the taste. Everyone's listening and they're saying, well, why didn't you just bring him some things back? And there wasn't much left over. That was one of the sad parts of the story. So there's a new restaurant opening up soon. The Churro Vita is getting ready to launch. I'm very excited about that. We're going to talk to those good folks at some point as they get ready to launch. Do you know what we're talking about next week when we go to Tucson Foodie? We are talking about the fact that Tucson, Arizona, and the regional cuisine scene here is so remarkably robust that it is getting national and international attention from news and food journalists from literally all over the planet, because Tucson is an inspiring place that is inspiring a lot of people, thanks to people like Carlotta Flores and Ray Flores and the Hemp Tamales and Barrio Bread and the James Beard nominees that we have this past season. We've just got a lot going on. And for anybody that wants to know where to go to get the best stuff, and it's funny, every time I go and meet new people and we start talking about food, they're like, oh, where do you like to go? And the great thing about being a foodie in Tucson is there are so many wonderful places that you can literally keep learning all the time about new places. And you know how I like to refer to being a hospitality hero? You're a hospitality hero when you're the one who's turning somebody on to that new place. So I have a good friend who turned me on to the Carnitas La Yoka. And I can't believe I haven't been there before, but it was remarkably good. And the cabeza taco was really sumptuous and rich, super delicious. Now, that's not a tradition that I had. And I don't know if I ever had a mediocre one and just it never registered, or somebody said take a bite of this and it was cabeza and it didn't taste as short rib rich yummy as the ones I had the other day. But this is one of those things, when I was telling people about this, I remind them, if you've had a new thing introduced to you and you taste it and you don't love it, you have duty to ask the question, is this the best example of its kind in the world or the country or the region or the city? Because if it's not, then you don't know enough information about what this thing is supposed to taste like to say, oh, I like this or I don't like this. Now, granted, you don't like the one that you tried, but you can't judge the rest of them the same way. What if this is no more representational of the thing as eating a boot? You know, you just don't know. And so this is where it's at. And a little bird told me that this weekend's Tucson Pops concert is going to be a really great concert. And this weekend's activities with Pow Wow, we're going to talk about Pow Wow a little bit later on too. Did I tell you about Pow Wow last week? So there's a company called Borderlands Produce, and they take the produce that's basically left over or ready to go out of date, or I don't know what the qualification, but everything looked brilliantly fresh and wonderful, and it looked wonderful and tasted wonderful and was wonderful. So Yolanda contacted us, and we learned that they make these markets all around town with all this excess produce. And you can purchase 70 pounds of the most fresh, bright, delicious, ready-to-eat cucumbers, tomatoes, melons, squashes, peppers, delicious things. 70 pounds worth for $12. And so when you go to places like the Veterans Hospital down on South 6th, and they've got locations all over town. We're going to talk to Yolanda about what they have this week. If you are feeding a family, if you are feeding yourself, this is a place where you can go and get really great things at an affordable price. And you don't have to have any means test. Anybody, they want everybody to go. If you're a squillionaire, you can still go do this. If you don't, it's all based on donation. So even if you don't have 12 bucks, you can go and get the vegetables you need to feed your family. This is one of the great things that our community does to take care of itself. And the remarkable woman that runs this program is calling in just a little bit. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to take a quick break. And we're going to line everything up. We're going to let the stars align. We're going to let you catch your breath. Maybe you're in drive-thru. Are you at the drive-thru someplace fantastic? Are you at your favorite place for lunch? Are you waiting to figure out what you're going to do for lunch? Do we have as many questions about lunch as we do for dinner? I don't seem to recall that we go, hey, what's for lunch today, as much as we say, hey, what's for dinner tonight? Because that's always the one where we rack our brains. What are you having for lunch today? 520-790-2040. This is Around the Table live from the City of Gastronomy. We'll be back with more right after this. 1:20 p.m. You are listening to Around the Table live from the City of Gastronomy. You know, there is a Spanish proverb, con pan y vino se anda el camino. Now, I realize I might have butchered that a little bit, but the spirit of it is very much clear. This translates into, with bread and wine, you can walk your road, or in other words, with good food and wine, life is never too hard. You can discover the world's most delicious and exciting wines for yourself by the glass at Revel, a European-styled wine bar that proudly features amazing and delicious wines from around the world. They've got hand-selected beers as well, and carefully crafted meat and cheese boards. Revel is conveniently located on 9th Street between historic downtown and the vibrant 4th Avenue shopping district. Cultivate conviviality with us every Wednesday at the complimentary wine tasting events from 5:30 to 7 p.m. Cultivate yourself some real conviviality at Revel, a space for those who wish to celebrate life with friends, old and new. We're going to go to the phone lines. We've got a caller. Hello, caller. Michelle, are you there?
I'm here, Jennifer.
What are you having for lunch?
I had a beautiful salad with barrio bread.
Oh, yum.
You got me hooked on that stuff. It's so good.
I know. That's delicious.
And I might have to save a little bit or get some more to have with some mixed vegetables from Powwow.
I know. It's going to be really, really fun. They're great vegetables, too. And thanks for turning us on to all that. You're going to be with us in just a little bit. I know you're on your way here, and we're thrilled you're going to be with us. We've got a really exciting second hour. You know who's with us now? Zarela Martinez is one of the world's most acclaimed and respected authorities on the topic of cuisine, particularly Mexican cuisine. But she, in her own words, describes herself as a cultural interpreter, which I absolutely love. And I don't know that I've always remembered she used that language, but I love that she uses it now. She has been the host of several award-winning television programs. She is one of the great culinary teachers we have. She's written books. She's had the most acclaimed Mexican restaurants, and she's one of the world's leading hostesses, teaching us and reminding us about the cultural significance of many things, including sobremesa. She's our friend, and she is joining us today to talk about something that is really important to us all, and it's a legacy of books. Hers went to Schlesinger Library at Harvard University. Diana Kennedy's has now gone to the University of Texas at San Antonio to talk about why these great collections will offer inspiration for generations to come and why it matters. Our friend Zarela Martinez joins us today from her test kitchens and hacienda in New York City. How are you, Zarela?
I'm doing great. Thank you for thinking of me. I always like to be on with you because you're so provocative.
Well, thank you very much. And I love when you come and visit with us. You know, it was no surprise when I read today that you were highlighting in your own writing the work of Diana Kennedy's collection of cookbooks. And I want you to tell the story of what you wrote about today and why you think it's so significant.
Well, apart from the fact that she's sort of the doyen of Mexican food, and I think we all owe her a lot as far as the research and the passion that she put into her studies and all that. I mean, irrespective of her personality. But I think it's wonderful that it's going to be in San Antonio and that people of this part of the world are going to be able to access, you know, this marvelous collection that she put in all her life. I mean, she's 97 years old, for God's sake.
Right.
And mine is in on this side of the country.
So let's dial it back and talk about cookbooks as a category of collective culture, as an anthropological resource for us as much as a culinary resource. Would you talk about why cookbooks matter today and why these particular kinds of cookbook collections matter that have been curated by important people like yourself and Diana Kennedy?
Well, I think that they're part of a legacy, you know, and that you cannot get, you might be able to get very great recipes online, and you might be able to get out of a, you know, bind of, we want a quick menu, but you're not going to have the history or the culture. You're not going to have, it's not going to be situated in a cultural context, which I think is the beauty of food, you know, where it came from, who made it, you know, whose essence is in it. And Diana did a really beautiful job of that. And so did I.
Was she one of the, I mean, I don't want to take any credit away from anybody, but I think it's really important because we're really embracing Mexican cuisine as the important global influence that it truly is, not just culinarily, but on a humanity basis. There's something substantial that has been going on in this part of the world for 4,000 years, as evidenced by the fact that UNESCO has named Tucson a city of gastronomy. 4,000 years of cultivation are being referenced. So there is a legitimate legacy from a comprehensive cultural standpoint revolving around food, the cultivation of food, the cooking of food, the sharing of food. Talk a little bit for us about how you see the sort of global awareness of Mexican food. What is the role of Mexican food today in our global culture?
Well, it's one of the four major cuisines, I think, in the world, you know, besides Chinese and French and I guess Italian, I don't know. It's one of the main, you know, main cuisines. And I think what makes it wonderful is that it's very regional. It isn't just one Mexican food. Every state has its own dishes, its own products, and this is, as people have traveled to Mexico, they've become, you know, they've become familiar with these things. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's certain flavor principles that Mexico has given to the world, you know, like chili, lime, which is not originally Mexican, but lime, tomatoes, cilantro. You know, the combination of the ingredients from the old world and the new world that, you know, are characteristic of Mexican food. I'm kind of out of breath because I just ran in.
Okay. Well, take your breath. I'm going to ask another long question because that's how I tend to roll. But you've inspired me on so many levels, and we have so much to talk about. Of course, we're talking to the incredible Zarela Martinez on the topic of cookbooks being donated by remarkable culinarians. In this instance, this week, we get news that Diana Kennedy's collection of over 600 important and historic and rare cookbooks about Mexican food have been donated to the Special Collections Vault at the University of Texas San Antonio campus. And there is an article from tastecooking.com that you referenced today, Zarela. You also,
I'm on Facebook page.
Yeah, on your Facebook page. And you call this moment important, and you say that this is a treasure. Have you had a chance to see any of these books? Do you, I would imagine there's a little bit of overlap in her culinary library and yours.
Yeah, no, I actually haven't, but I've heard of them. You know, it's sort of legendary. And I think it's a wonderful, wonderful gift to humanity that they're going to be preserved because you know, when I put it up on Facebook, some of my Mexican friends said, well, it's too bad that it didn't stay in Mexico. And I said, they don't have the money to preserve it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, in the state that it should be. And so I think that it's wonderful that it's at the University of Texas, because as it is, they have the largest collection of things Mexican, not just food, you know.
Will you talk about what happens when somebody important in the culinary world, such as yourself or Diana Kennedy, looks at your collection for the important work that it is, and how you come to develop a relationship and choose an institution, and what happens to the books? Do they get digitized? Talk about that process, because I think it's an unusual, I don't think most of us know what happens and what it means.
Well, see, the thing is that Diana's and mine, from what I can tell in this article, archives or papers are totally different.
Mm-hmm.
Because mine mostly involve, you know, my on-site research, you know, my field research, and the 77, 78 notebooks of recipes as people gave them to me, and sayings and songs and meanings of certain traditions, you know, and it's a totally different thing. And so people, I don't know how much of it is digitized, but I do know that there is a very complete index, including, you know, my collection is 17 and a half linear feet of space. And there's 5,000 photographs and I don't know how many feet of B-roll of when we did the series. It's a very complete thing about the culture as well. It's not just about the food.
Right. And let's remind people that they include photographs of you with cooking at the White House, photographs of you in President Reagan. I mean, the comprehensive scope of the work that you've given this country and this culture are represented in this. It's a great opportunity to sort of jump back in for a minute and say, wow, look at all that. How do you explain your collection that went to the Schlesinger Library? How do you talk about it for people?
Well, I'm a pack rat, you know, so I had everything. I had this sense that I was going to be somebody important. So I kept every single little piece of paper that you can imagine. So my collection is very complete, and it also explains how this Mexican girl born on the border, you know, came to New York, triumphed with, you know, what most people would not imagine, that I had a lot of background. I had no professional background. So to me, it's just also about my history and how an immigrant can succeed in the United States.
Wow.
You know, because the Radcliffe Library is dedicated to pioneering women. So that's why I wanted my papers to be there.
And who uses those library resources today as the culinary world becomes more and more broad? As an industry, food journalists used to be a narrow little volume of maybe 5,000 people, the IACP membership, the James Beard Foundation. Today, with as many food bloggers, there may be tens of millions of people who on some level write about food in some way. But there's still a core group of cookbook authors and historians and academics and researchers. But who goes and uses these libraries either at UT or at Harvard?
Well, I think that it's like government agencies trying to study the mentality of the Latins, let's say. You know, companies go in and look to see what was in fashion, you know, 50 years ago. There's a very wide assortment of people who go and look at this work. It's really interesting. You know, I always had a life plan.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing on my lifetime was I want to leave a legacy. And when my papers went to Harvard, I said, okay, I'm done. Of course, for a little
but
while.
But you're not done.
No, of course not.
I mean, you're in the middle of writing a book right now, which is what we love.
No, and I have a very exciting project, but I can't talk about it.
I know you told me that. Now, listen, let's keep talking about the food, because it's lunchtime and you're from this region. What did lunch look like for you? when you
now
were growing
later?
No, when you were
then?
Growing up in this region, when you were growing up in Sonora.
We always had a Mexican meal for lunch. It was either a sopa aguada, like a soup, or sopa seca, and homemade asaderos, and corn tortillas, and a salsa. Every single day. At night, we had continental food.
And when you talk about some of these, the asaderos, or so I don't know that I've ever even had sopa seca. Describe what that is, because I'm still discovering.
It's a pilaf style pasta. You know, you brown the pasta, either in the oven or on top of the stove until it's golden. Then you maybe, you know, boil a tomato or roast it in a comal, puree it with jalapeno, a little bit of onion, some cilantro. Saute it on top of the pasta and chicken stock until it's consumed, and that's it.
Sounds so good.
It's delicious. I have recipes on my website.
Yeah, let's tell everybody what your website is while we're on the topic.
It's zarela.com, zarela.com. And I work on it all the time.
Oh, you're constantly updating it.
Yeah.
I would love, if there's anybody out there that knows, where can we find somebody? Is there a restaurant? Is there a truck somewhere? Is there somebody somewhere in Tucson, in the region? Where can we get a sopa seca? What's the thing you miss the most from those luncheons? What's a flavor or a food that you miss that really just distinctively has to come from here?
Well, the tortillas, of course.
Yeah.
You know, that's the... I mean, my grandmother... My mother was from Sonora and my father was from Chihuahua. But my grandmother had this cook that used to make this tortillas, and I still remember her fat arm rolling the tortillas from one to the other as like a wave, you know?
Mm.
They were beautiful on the wood stove.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I can still smell them.
See, that's the power of the sense memory.
Yeah.
When you were
Pardon?
When you were a young cook, when you were a young culinarian and you endeavored into this industry and you started to do the kinds of newsmaking, really breakthrough work that you started to do, do you wish you had had library collections like the one that the University
of
Texas?
No, not at all.
Did it make a difference?
It made a difference in this sense. As I told you, when I was growing up in this ranch in Chihuahua, my mom used to cook continental food at night. And especially, she also used to cook from a woman named, who was a chef, Helen Corbett.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So even though I was cooking ranch food, it always had this sort of party feel. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So when I came to New York that first time and cooked all of traditional Mexican foods that they had never seen here, people were blown away. You know, picadillo, red snapper hash, crab enchiladas. You know, these were all flavors that they had never imagined were Mexican.
Right.
It was very exciting.
One of the things that I think is very important for us to do is to remind people, because in this region, this is just the vernacular. But the world seems to be taking a lot of notice of Tucson, Arizona, and the Sonoran High Desert and the region from a culinary standpoint. Do you find that people are more interested than ever in this culinary region?
Yes, I do. It's being discovered. It's sort of Tex-Mexy, but more Mexy, you know?
Mm-hmm. What is
it's familiar food, but more refined.
Mm-hmm. When we see the interest from around the world, there's a chance for us to rediscover some of this cuisine anew. What are the things, given that you've been in New York for a couple of decades and have a profound impact on the industry, what can you help reflect back to us about what we have here to make people truly appreciate how rich and diverse and wonderful this cuisine is?
Well, it's hard to pinpoint something, but I think that homemade feeling, the red chili sauces, the combination of dishes that were combination of northern Indian people like the Yaquis and the Aztecs, you know, those are different flavors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like wheat with pozole, let's say, or wheat with beans, which are very yucky. Mm-hmm. So I think that is one of the things that we see, plus also the way of preserving food. You know, my mom used to make what were called bichigoris, where she would dry, we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
Where she would dry the zucchini, you know, for the winter.
And say that word one more time, because I think it's one of those wonderful legacy foods that we don't want to lose.
Bichigoris.
Bichigoris.
B-I-C-H-I-C-O-R-I-S.
Bichigoris.
And they're like dried zucchini. You know, when the zucchini gets really old,
mm-hmm.
you cut it like with an apple cutter, you know, like in this long twirly thing, and then you sun dry it and bring it in at night, because otherwise it get wet with the dew, and then you have to start all over.
And it almost looks like a pasta shape?
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's kind of chewy and sweet, and then you cut it in pieces and you make a stew with it, with onion and roasted chilies.
We're going to take a very quick break right now, and we're back with more with the incomparable and legendary Zarella Martinez. If you'd like to ask Zarella a question about her world and her tastes and her connection to this magnificent region, we have a very rare opportunity to have calls. 520-790-2040. This is Around the Table. Our guest of honor today, Zarella Martinez. We'll be back with more live from the City of Gastronomy. You're listening to AM 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Welcome back, everybody. It's 1:43 p.m. and the studio is percolating with friends and food, foodies, and fabulousness as our guests keep filtering through. The Vintage Oracle is here today with us, and she walked in and she's so gorgeous and she's so glammed up. And she's just classing the whole joint. Well, she's classing me up. Let's not say the whole joint because Michelle's here. And
I feel like a schlep right now.
No, because this is really big. Do you know who we have on the phone? Is Zarella Martinez, one of the most extraordinarily generous, talented, visionary culinary artists. She describes herself as a cultural interpreter. And that is no small thing, because for many people, she has been the definitive voice of defining and introducing the cuisine of Mexico through her series on public television, through the many series and television broadcasts, which I consider teaching. She was teaching on television for years. She was also a restaurateur, a single mother. She's an extraordinary woman, and I'm very, very fortunate to say she is my friend. Zarella Martinez joins us live from her test kitchens in New York City at her gorgeous hacienda between the high rises. Zarella Martinez, welcome back.
Thank you, darling.
I love your hacienda in the middle of the city because it truly has that, it's got a little taste of this region.
Yeah, because I have all my treasures here, you know, including the brands, the cattle brands from the ranch and a painting of the ranch that my father did and all the things I've bought, and it means a lot to me. So, I like my little apartment.
At least a little apartment. It's the most fantastic place you could possibly imagine. Let's just talk about the reason we started talking today. Diana Kennedy, the extraordinarily prolific, longstanding Mexican food expert, has recently literally driven the 840 miles from her home in Michoacan, Mexico, to San Antonio, Texas, to hand deliver her very most special cookbooks from her own collection, which is being donated to the University of Texas at San Antonio. And it's in this collection that is a virtual repository of the collective wisdom, tradition, recipes, and food ways of Mexican culture. Does any more significant collection exists in your experience? Is there anything in Mexico City? Has the Mexican government ever compiled anything like this? Where does this fit in the fullness of the collective Mexican food story?
I think they probably have a lot of stuff like from Salvador Novo, you know, people that wrote books in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's more what they have. And in whatever stories, I think like Sophie Coe, you know, quoted a lot of what the Aztecs were eating when they first got there. I think they have all that material in Mexico.
This gave us the opportunity to reach out to you and to reach out in a way that explained why this is significant. It was so significant, you wrote about it today, and it gave us the chance to say your own cookbook collection, which is more than a cookbook collection. It's actually the important archives of your entire career, both on television.
My research, and all my research.
Yeah, yeah. And it's impossible to state in a 20-minute broadcast the scope of your research. But let's just remind people of some of the research that you did that will... that isn't as easy as like, hey, I did a cooking show on TV, which is a lot of work on its own. But you did several PhDs worth of research on the topic. Can you just briefly tell us a little bit about that part of your life and your work?
Yeah, well, I did a lot of research on Oaxaca, and I wrote a book, The Food and Life of Oaxaca. And then I did a lot of research on Veracruz and had a PBS series. They're the two different phases of Mexico, you know, the very indigenous, mystic, somber, and then the Afro-Mexican aspect of Veracruz. But probably the thing that is the most important thing to me is that in 2004, the Department of State did an article on trendsetters in the United States. And they named seven people that have changed the way Americans eat. And I'm one of them.
Which is really substantial.
Yeah. So now I'm trying to do the same thing with a different concept, which you'll be the first to know.
Well, I love that. You'll call back and tell us all about it. We want to let the listeners who are out there today that are having their lunch hour give us a call if they want to talk to you about the incredible legacy. Maybe they knew your mom. Maybe they cooked from your mom's cookbook. Aida Gabilondo was one of the first to... She was the first, if I'm not mistaken.
She was the first. Yeah, I remember that that Paula Wolfer told me when my mom did her book. Zarella, I'm so disappointed in your mother's book. I thought she was going to top Diana. And I said, Paula, I hate to break it to you, but this is the way people in the border and most Mexicans, middle-class Mexicans, cook. Not the way Diana wrote about, you know, which is a beautiful homage to the people of the land. But this is not the way people cook at home, you know, like in Douglas, Arizona, or Tucson. And my mom's book is.
Right. Let's tell everybody what the name of your mother's book is, so that they can go find it for themselves, because those recipes are still on the internet. And it's really an interesting way to get a taste of food and flavors that people might remember from their own childhoods, because this was really influential and still is.
Yeah, Mexican Family Cooking.
Mexican Family Cooking by?
Aida, A-I-D-A, Gabilondo, G-A-B-I-L-O-N-D-O.
Mexican Family Cooking by Aida Gabilondo. And one of the things, do you ever see when your son's cooking on TV, when he slips into some of your recipes or some of hers, how does that make you feel?
It makes me feel very proud. And, you know, he just finished writing his memoir.
Oh, did he?
It's going to be published in October. And it is really, really good. I'm very proud of him.
That is so fantastic.
And it's called Where I Come From, and he was very kind to me.
I love that. You're going to give me tears of joy. That's lovely. I want to thank you for coming in, visiting with us today so generously with your time, so very generously with the work that you've done, and for the chance to give you a much-deserved, a well-earned, and I hope for a lot of people, both inspiring and maybe even illuminating look at a woman who has given us so incredibly much in this country and globally regarding the cuisine of Mexico, the food that is from this place, that is so synchronous with this moment in time where we're beginning to feel that the world is paying attention to Sonora and to Tucson and this region and the city of gastronomy. Zarella Martinez, thank you so much. And thank you for the gift of Sobremesa. You were the one who taught me it. First and foremost. Zarella, thank you. Ah, she's... Oh, all right, sorry. We're going to take a very quick break. And we're not going to take a... I thought you were giving me the break symbol. We'll get it together. So I'm very, very, very glad that you're here with us. You are listening to Around the Table on AM 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, where the local news is the local talk and the local talk is the local news. You know, there's a Spanish proverb, con pan y vino se anda el camino, which translates to, with bread and wine, you can walk your road. In other words, with good food and wine, life is never too hard. Discover the world's most delicious and exciting wines for yourself by the glass at Revel, a European-styled wine bar that proudly features wines from around the world, hand-selected beers, and carefully crafted meat and cheese boards. Revel is conveniently located on 9th Street between historic downtown and the vibrant 4th Avenue shopping district. Cultivate conviviality every Wednesday at their complimentary wine tasting events from 5:30 to 7 p.m., where the wines are selected for this too hot to cook, too hot to eat time of year. There is something extraordinary about Revel because there you have a space for those who wish to celebrate life and toast with friends, old and new. Each and every week, Todd Getzelman, the proprietor of Revel, visits with us and introduces us to some delicious wines that will go with the cuisine, both at lunchtime, lower alcohol wines, of course, but those wines that are delicious for when the temperatures get really hot. In this segment, we have, as a prelude to the next hour, as we're going to segue through to the next hour, we are going to introduce you to some extraordinary friends. The Vintage Oracle is here. And this is the first time I've ever seen you without your cards.
Oh, they're right here.
Oh, they're right here. Okay. Right here. Michelle Cardenas joins us as well. She is the very generous proprietress of Bright Way Wellness here in Tucson, Arizona. And she's a practitioner of Reiki. She's also one of the people behind the organization called the Tucson Reiki Junkies. And she joins us regularly now to help give us that healing boost we need to get over the hump on Wednesday and get into the week on a positive note and to head into the weekend on a very positive note. And she joins us now in that celebrated seat. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Jennifer.
So you have a big event. Well, not a big event, but you have an event coming tomorrow. You're doing one of your sessions tomorrow?
We actually have two events tomorrow. One is the Practitioners Only Reiki Share, in which we invite everyone to come and participate and be in the space. But those that are going to be giving and receiving will be the practitioners, because at most of our Reiki Shares, the practitioners are giving, and they don't have the opportunity because of time restraints to receive. So the practitioners only, you just have to have Reiki 1 or some other type of energy healing modality and come and give and receive.
Is Reiki something that is universally practiced? Is Tucson a particularly rich and robust center of Reiki knowledge and practice?
It's worldwide. It's a worldwide energy healing modality, but Tucson seems to have a really great high concentration of really great practitioners. So any corner of Tucson, you will find Reiki practitioners.
So you will, at this Reiki Share tomorrow, be helping people who are the practitioners get a little help themselves.
Yeah, because we're human too. And so we need a little bit of love and good juju, you know. Like I said, we're always giving, and we do give to ourselves as well as practitioners. We keep ourselves energized, but sometimes it's nice to just sit and relax and have somebody do the process, and we just sit and revel in it.
Okay. So what we're going to do right now, because we've got 3 minutes before the end of the hour, and that means that people that are on their lunch break are heading back to work, potentially. Maybe some people are just getting off work, but I'm going to think that the people that really need us, and I say us like I'm part of this, like I'm just sitting here watching and marveling at that. I have three Reiki healers in the studio with us, and we are going to do a quick session of Radio Reiki. We did this last week. We got a really positive response. And for people who don't know what that means, quickly tell them what Radio Reiki is.
So Reiki is an energy form of healing. And because radio is energy, we can send that energy through the radio waves to everyone listening. and they can receive a little Reiki themselves.
And we'll talk about this on the other end, but it's both like healing of the body, mind, the spirit. This isn't just like, you know, my muscles will be less sore. It's whatever you need.
Whatever you need. Reiki is an intelligent source and will go where it needs to go.
So we've got about 2.5 minutes.
Okay. So I'm going to ask my colleagues here to send Reiki through the radio as I verbally challenge us through this. Okay. So imagine yourself sitting quietly, eyes closed if you can. And today we're going to do Reiki that's very targeted. So if there's an area of tension or concern, I want you to put your thoughts there and imagine myself and my colleagues placing our hands upon that area. It can be the physical body, emotional, mental, spiritual, whatever it is you need. We are concentrating that energy and sending it to you now. That area may feel warm. You may feel a warmth or a tingle, and that's the energy being entered in through that part of the body, mind, spirit that needs this so much needed love energy.
It's wonderful.
And we are done.
That's all it takes. That's all it takes. Isn't that wonderful? So what happens when somebody wants to come to Brightway Wellness? Say someone's feeling like they need this. They need a treatment. What does a treatment look like? I mean, that was just 2 minutes, but...
A treatment looks like this. Okay, I always do a free consultation beforehand. We talk about what the needs of the recipient is. We talk about what kind of tensions they might have, what kind of stress, and then they will actually get on the table for a full hour. There is some hands-on and hands-off healing happening during the session. And afterwards, we get up and we talk a little bit before they get on their way, make sure that they're not feeling too dizzy from all the energy. Wow. But most people will fall asleep or go into a meditative state and feel fabulous after.
I love the idea of that. I hope you're feeling fabulous. We love that you've joined us on this hour. And as we wrap this part of the show up, we're going to remind you when you get home today, please hug your kids and count your blessings. Up next, we've got the maestro of the Tucson Pops, Pow Wow, and more. Spirit's Kitchen, you name it, we'll be here.